Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, where podcasts are also available under Public Affairs and on the award-winning WDIY app. Today is March 9th, 2022. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 33,286, the NASDAQ at 13,255, and the S&P at 4,277. Our topic this evening is listeners' tax questions. Keep them coming. We will take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can ask, still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And if you prefer not to speak live, you can just give your question to Eric, and he'll write it down and bring it in to me. But I really welcome folks to call in and ask their question live. If you are not comfortable doing either of those and you have a more private question, you can certainly send it through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight's topic, listeners' tax questions. Phone number is 610-758-8810. Maybe you need a little help or just some understanding about something to kind of keep you going with getting your tax return prepared, and we're here to help. So coming into the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, Marcy had written in, and she said, I have a power of attorney for my 95-year-old aunt whose husband is deceased and has no children. She's now in a skilled nursing facility paying $373 a day. Since I will need to file her tax returns on her behalf, how much of the skilled nursing cost is deductible? So I answered Marcy, other than for personal care, you should be able to include the full cost of her care as a medical deduction because it's skilled nursing. Medical would include out-of-pocket expenses, supplementary insurance, Medicare premiums, dental, vision, and prescriptions. Typically, I will ask clients to get a doctor's letter stating that the person cannot perform two activities of daily living, such as transferring, bathing, toileting, feeding, and there's another one, I think, or could cause harm to themselves. So typically, we might think of someone with Alzheimer's or dementia. So it's those activities of daily living that will define how much would be deductible of like skilled care. Typically, when we're talking about skilled nursing care, that when someone is in that level of care, that is considered nursing care, and that would be fully deductible. When I said other than for personal care, occasionally, or what you will also see on those invoices from, and this is me going off the answer to the question, I'm just adding to it a little bit. You will sometimes see things like haircuts or getting their hair done, or I forgot what some of the other personal care items we might see on there, but that type of personal care expense would not be deductible. as I mentioned, dental, vision, the supplementary health insurance, like if you have, you know, maybe AARP or, you know, Capital Blue on top of Medicare, that is called the supplementary insurance. That would be deductible. Prescriptions, the copays, that type of thing. Now, what happens, though, when I say, you know, it's deductible is, and when someone asks how much she asked, when I file her tax return, how much is deductible? What she's talking about is Schedule A, where we put itemized deductions. And since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, when they raised the standard deduction so high, many people are no longer itemizing. But where I do see people still itemizing could be, you know, someone who's very, very charitably inclined or someone who has really high mortgage interest, but especially when someone has skilled nursing care, because as you heard me mention, the cost was $373 a day. That is a huge bill and, you know, warrants huge medical deductions. But what happens on Schedule A is you enter all of these medical costs, and then there's a limit on them. And the limit is 7.5% of the page one income. So if the page one income is $100,000, and we're talking about 7.5%, that would be $7,500 would not be allowed. But if you have $100,000 of skilled care, it's $100,000 less $7,500. The remaining amount is deductible. And obviously, when you're talking about that large of deductions, you're typically going to benefit from itemizing. Now, what I'm usually looking for in planning when I see that kind of scenario is how much income is on the return, and should we put more income on the return to get more of a benefit from that deduction. So if I only saw, you know, $30,000 on the return and I have a $100,000 deduction, and I know that Aunt Mary has an IRA with, you know, $300,000 in it, I might convert that IRA to a Roth IRA to report that income on the return so that I get an advantage of that deduction. So in this case, this aunt didn't have children, but sometimes you're preserving some of the assets for children. And that's one way to kind of take advantage of that tax deduction that otherwise would go to waste. So I hope that made sense. And yes, when we're talking about skilled nursing, it is quite high. Now, some people will have long-term care insurance. And typically, if you have long-term care insurance, skilled nursing is a qualified expense, and therefore you're not double dipping. If you have $100,000 of skilled nursing and you have $100,000 of long-term care that's covered, which generally doesn't cover all of it, you know, you're not going to take a deduction for that. But if the long-term care covers, let's pretend half, $50,000, then you would be able to deduct the other $50,000. All right. So I hope that helps. Now, what I have also done is I've asked the advisors in the office what kind of questions have they been getting from the clients. And I got a slew of questions. So lots and lots of questions have been coming into the office. And I expect that our listeners probably have lots of questions as well that may be a little bit shy about calling in. But if you're too shy to talk on air, you can certainly just give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and then bring it in to me. And you could also send those questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I usually will respond directly to you as well. Occasionally I miss them, but generally I will respond directly to you, even if I don't answer it on air. So I had some questions come in, which I will go over through, you know, the rest of the show, things about COVID-related tax benefits, about funeral costs, about tax breaks for women-owned businesses, claiming a home office, where is your domicile, residential energy credits, multi-state credits, employee business expense deductions, filing separate returns versus married filing joint. And, you know, you still love each other and live together. It's just, when is there a benefit to filing separate? using part of your refund for I-bonds and some inheritance tax questions. So lots of questions came through from the advisors, which I hope to cover as well. But more importantly, I want to answer questions for our listeners. So if you have any, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY's public affairs interviews are now on major podcast platforms. This month's edition of QLV features Black Lives Matter Lehigh Valley founder Justin Parker Fields.
There's so many different intersectionalities. I mean, even to this day, like, I'm still educating and learning as I go, because that's important. You know, we can't just shut ourselves off and just self-identify and say, okay, I'm only worried about people that look like me and identify as me.
Listen to QLV, available now on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 FM and on WDIY.org and the WDIY app. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We saw a call come in from Edwin, and if you had not heard the number to call in, it is 610-758-8810. Some of the questions that we've had from, you know, various clients, and the topic this evening, folks, is listeners' tax questions. So if you have any, please feel free to call in or send the question to yourfinancialchoices.com. I will not monitor that during the show, though. I would have to answer you separately from that. I'll get distracted otherwise going down the road of my emails. So one of the advisors said a client had asked about COVID-related tax benefits. Most recently, a client asked if there was any special income tax deduction for paying for a funeral of a brother-in-law who died of COVID. But people think there are generally all kinds of special deductions related to COVID. So let me answer this in a couple parts. The second part of the question as to special deductions. There were some credits for eligible employers for qualified sick and family leave wages for employees taken between April 1st, 2021 and September 30th, 2021 under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. And I believe that also applied to self-employed business owners. But these wages are still taxable to the employees. So I think there were some special deductions or credits available for employers, but not necessarily employees or individual taxpayers. As to the funeral costs, what someone might be thinking of or had heard was there is some funeral assistance available, and I think still available, under FEMA. So if you go to the FEMA.gov website, FEMA, FEMA.gov, they have links for funeral assistance. It says the COVID-19 pandemic has brought overwhelming grief to many. At FEMA, our mission is to help people before, during, and after disasters. We're dedicated to helping ease some of the financial stress and burden caused by the virus. Under the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act of 2021 and the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, FEMA is providing financial assistance. Excuse me, not on the line? Okay. Financial assistance for COVID-19 related funeral expenses incurred on or after January 20th, 2020. And how to apply? You can call the Funeral Assistance Helpline, the COVID-19 Funeral Assistance Helpline at 844-684-6333. And that, again, is available at FEMA.gov website if you want more information on that. So basically, if the death certificate says COVID-19 and there was funeral cost, I think you can request some assistance. And I believe it's up to $9,000. And if it's like multiple family I think it's limited to like $35,000 is what I had seen. So it can be after the fact, you can still apply. So again, that is for COVID-19 Funeral Assistance Helpline. So not a tax deduction as the person had asked, but yes, some funeral assistance. Okay, we had Sharon from Allentown call in off air, and she said, are brokerage fees deductible on state or federal returns? No. No, they're not, Sharon. They used to be. When we had Schedule A and we itemized deductions, there was a line item called miscellaneous itemized deductions. And if you had brokerage fees not from like a non-taxable account and not fees related to non-taxable income, you would have to allocate it. If you had like tax-exempt income, you'd have to allocate the fees. So if you had fees inside an IRA, those wouldn't be deductible. It would be basically on individual or joint accounts. So they used to be part of miscellaneous itemized deductions on Schedule A. They took that away under the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That is set to sunset in 2026, so we could see some of those deductions coming back if there's no further legislation changes. Okay, so not right now. Number two, is there a limit on charitable donations? Also donated an antique dining set. Yes, there is a limit on donations. So Sharon, if someone itemizes, and again, you would itemize deductions on Schedule A if they exceeded the standard deduction. And the standard deduction for single people is $12,550. For married filing joint, it's $25,100. If you're over 65, you get even a larger deduction. But so those are kind of some big numbers to jump over. And then once you jump over them, what helps you jump over them for Schedule A? It could be the medical that I mentioned earlier. It could be mortgage interest. The taxes on Schedule A are limited to $10,000. So I see single people itemizing more than married filing joint because single people have the same $10,000 cap on the taxes. And then it's the mortgage interest and the charitable contributions. So let's say you get over that. Then charitable deductions are limited based on page one income. For 2021, they don't have a limit. It's 100% of page one income. If you donate appreciated securities, meaning you've held them long term and you make a donation of appreciated securities to your favorite charity, that is limited to 30% of your page one income. Same thing applies to donor-advised funds. So there's a limit that way. If you're not itemizing, there was a special provision in one of the, you know, CARES Acts, I think, that is allowing charitable contributions on page one without having to itemize. So you still get the standard deduction, but then they're allowing a little extra charitable deduction. If you're single, it's limited to $300. If you're married filing joint, it's $600. Monetary donation, Sharon. So if you donated the dining set and you think the value was $3,500, and typically we're talking about thrift shop value, so that antique dining set, is how much is it going to get in the thrift shop? It might not get $3,500 in the thrift shop, but that's not a monetary donation. So that doesn't count as part of that $300 or $600. If you're itemizing back to Schedule A and your non-monetary donations exceed, or, you know, like Goodwill, Salvation Army, that kind of thing, Purple Heart, if those donations exceed $500, then you have to do a special form called an 8283. And on the form 8283 for your non-monetary donations, you have to describe them. You have to describe what you've given, how you've valued it, what else? The address of the organization, and the date. So there is more involved when you're doing those kinds of donations. But if it is for more than $5,000, they expect a qualified appraisal of that donation. All right. So bottom line, most people, what I see them doing, unless they've done some really good financial planning as part of their philanthropic, you know, endeavors, typically I'm seeing people get the $300 or the $600. Okay. Not a huge donation, not a huge deduction, but I hope that helps, Sharon. Great questions. Phone number, folks, if you have any, the topic tonight is listeners' tax questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Connect to WDIY with our streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. The topic this evening, listeners' tax questions. The phone lines are open. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Eric and he'll write it down, as he did for Sharon. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810, or you can send the questions through the website yourfinancialchoices.com, as Marcy did yesterday. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the questions. And getting questions answered, you know, some of this can be complicated. I have talked a number of times about you don't know what you don't know. Even I, doing this for a very long time, there are still things I don't know. I mean, we work very hard to try to stay abreast of everything, but I am telling you, over the past several years, there have been so many legislative changes in taxes and tax reform. It is very difficult to keep up, and it's hard to even memorize these numbers anymore. Back in the day, they didn't change them so often, and now it's, you know, numbers change all the time for inflation, and it's just sometimes really hard to keep up. So we hope that we bring ideas and you know, new laws and strategies to you regularly, and we really learn a lot from our listeners as well. And I really appreciate those who call in with those questions, because it makes a difference in what I know you might need to hear about. So I did ask our advisors what kind of questions they are getting as well. And again, lots of questions. I was so excited to hear from so many of them. And one of the questions that someone had was, are there any special tax breaks for women-owned business? Now, I didn't find anything on this either as far as any tax breaks. Sometimes what you'll hear about will be maybe grants that people can apply for, whether it's, you know, minorities, women, you know, new small businesses. There could be particular grants that you may be able to apply for. I'm not aware of tax breaks, except that there was something called the Treasury's Forecast of Contracting Opportunities. And I found this actually on the IRS's website, and the IRS is participating in it. And what they said is, our goal is to foster an environment where small businesses can compete successfully for a fair share of our procurements, which is, you know, buying. We also help large businesses increase subcontracting opportunities. It says individual appointments are made available by person or in phone. And, you know, you can go to the website to get more information on that. But on the Treasury's site, it's called Public Law 100-656, the Business Opportunity Development Reform Act of 1988 amended the Small Business Act to emphasize acquisition planning. The law requires agencies to compile and make available projections or contracting opportunities that small businesses, including minority, women-owned, hub-zone, veteran-owned, and service-disabled veteran-owned, may be able to perform. So that is something, and I'm sure they're probably, as I mentioned, organizations out there that offer grants that many of these businesses may apply for as well. So no tax credits that I'm aware of for women-owned businesses, but certainly maybe some business opportunities through government agencies that are required under this Business Opportunity Development Reform Act of 88 and for making available contracting work to some of these smaller businesses. All right, so you can check that out. There is a phone number, 240-613-8600. Okay, some more relevant questions, I would say. A recent one was a person with a dedicated desk in a room, and the desk was used exclusively for business. They wanted to understand the home office deduction. And the advisor said, I get lots of questions about home office when the business owner provides services at other locations. So home office, you know, you got to be careful here. A desk in a room. Not necessarily, you know, exclusively for business. If you're in a 100 square foot room and it's your living room and it's got a TV in there and you literally just have the desk with, you know, all your personal stuff around there too, I'm not sure the IRS would really deem that to be exclusive use. So you want to be careful. I think we're getting this question more often now because so many people have been working from home, and so then they think they can take a home office deduction. But for employees of an employer outside, you know, you're employed by a company and you happen to be working from home, the employee business expense of a home office is not deductible anymore. So save your efforts in that, because that also was a miscellaneous itemized deduction, like I mentioned earlier to Sharon about the brokerage fees. Miscellaneous itemized deductions went away. So it used to be if you worked for an employer who required you to work from home because they had no office for you, you could take a deduction for a home office. It would be an employee, unreimbursed employee business expense, and you would report it on Schedule A as an itemized deduction. And you only got the benefit of it if you indeed itemized your deductions. So a lot of people didn't qualify for it anyway, and now people don't qualify for it. But for Pennsylvania residents, you might say, well, I'm a Pennsylvania resident, and Pennsylvania has a schedule called a UE, a Pennsylvania UE form. It's for unreimbursed employee business expenses. We typically see that for union dues, uniforms, if you're a doctor, a nurse, you know, that kind of thing. You have expenses that you might have to pay out of pocket that your employer's not paying for, then that would be expenses you would report on the UE. And that's where you could also take possibly this home office deduction. But there are so many complications around it, and there is so much record keeping for it, that the end result is generally not even worth it. And even Pennsylvania has information about that on their website, and they give an example because they mention if you're going to take a home office deduction, you can't pick and choose which expenses you're going to take, and it would include utilities. So if your office is, 5% of the total of your house, and you're taking 5% of your mortgage interest and 5% of your real estate taxes, and you have to take 5% depreciation, 5% of your utilities, then you have to fill out a use tax form to pay a use tax on the utilities that you're taking as a deduction on your form UE for your home office deduction. I'm telling you, it's probably not worth it. And if you're asking your accountant to do it, your accountant to prepare these forms and enter all this information, you're going to pay them more probably in an hourly fee than this Pennsylvania state tax you're going to save at 3.07 on 5% of almost, you know, nothing. And then I haven't even started talking about if you take depreciation and then there's recapture on that, and you could have a gain on what is ordinarily not taxable on a principal residence if you eventually sell it. So the home office deduction, but for federal purposes, if you're self-employed, a home office deduction may be worth it. And they have a simplified method that you can take a deduction for federal, and then you just skip the deduction for Pennsylvania to avoid that use tax, because Pennsylvania doesn't allow the simplified method. I can touch on that when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It is 6:30, we have 32 degrees, and light snow is falling throughout the valley. Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, chance of rain and snow, patchy fog, low 27. Thursday morning, patchy fog, mostly sunny skies, high 49, and partly cloudy Thursday night, low 28. Friday, partly sunny skies return, high 52. WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted local NPR member station for over 25 years, with many choices, real voices, like Lori Siebert with Your Financial Choices.
And like James Johnson, thank you very much, James. And playing that Vivaldi music in the background, I absolutely love it. Whenever I find my mind spinning with my thoughts, I have to put on my Vivaldi, and it helps bring me back into focus. Because, as you know, regular listeners to the show, how could my mind not spin with all of this information that we tried to cover here? Let me quickly kind of wrap up the conversation about home office after giving the phone number one more time, which is 610-758-8810. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me. If you don't want to talk live on air, just give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and he'll bring it in to me. And the phone number again is 610-758-8810. We're taking listeners' tax questions tonight. So let me wrap up this home office. So basically, if you're an employee, I wouldn't bother. If you're self-employed, definitely worth considering. I love that the IRS offered this simplified method a few years ago, and it's called basically the simplified method, and it's $5 per square foot of the exclusive business use of your home. So if it's 100, well, they give an example of 300 square feet. That's the maximum that the office can be. And typically, I'm usually seeing, 200 square feet for offices generally. So 300 square feet times $5 is $1,500 deduction. You get that for federal. You don't have to do any extra schedule. You don't have to do the 8829 for the home office. You don't have to figure out depreciation or allocating your mortgage interest. If you itemize, you still get the full deduction for the mortgage interest on your Schedule A. You don't have to allocate it away, but you don't get it for Pennsylvania. But again, as Pennsylvania has made this a little bit more complicated with the use tax on the utilities and just the amount of time it takes to enter all of that information, the cost to have a tax preparer do it really is not always worth it. So simplified method, great substitute for that. But if you do have the home office deduction, it's form 8829, unless you're doing the simplified method. And there is a publication for the business use of your home, and that is publication 587. All right. So some other questions that came up. So that was the home office deduction. Donna D had given me the question. Someone said, I don't know for my current paychecks what state taxes I should be paying. I have no permanent residence in 2022. From January of 2022 to May 1st, I am constantly traveling for work, staying in Airbnbs and hotels, and with friends. How does that work? And what is the best thing to be doing with my paychecks? Up until now, I was paying in New Jersey, but I was not even living there. I was going to switch to California, but I likely won't have a permanent residence there until later in the year. Wow, that's a whole boatload of stuff to unwrap. So I said it's kind of a tough one, but here's my typically what we talk about is we have these situations come up usually with people maybe who are RVing, you know, people who have motorhomes, who travel across the country, people who sell their homes, live in their RV, and they go from state to state. There are websites that, you know, you can go in and check. You can get a mail forwarding service. I had clients who did this. They did RVing for probably a few years. They had this service in South Dakota. They made their residence in South Dakota. South Dakota does not have a state income tax. And South Dakota would forward their mail to the next, like, campground that they were staying at. I have another couple who is considering doing this. They're going to retire and do an RV, and they're going to travel as well. And what they're choosing to do is use their daughter's address in Pennsylvania. They have been Pennsylvania residents for their entire lives. Their daughter is here. They're going to keep their cars, or one of the cars, parked in the driveway here. They're going to have the mail forwarded here. So they're going to keep their Pennsylvania address. Typically, when we look to where someone is going to pay income taxes, federal, they don't care where you're living. For Pennsylvania or for states, it's where you're domiciled. So where do you intend to be? Where do you vote? Where do you have your driver's license? And from what I could tell when I was looking this up, in particular for people who had, you know, nowhere to go, or, you know, were kind of in flux, it sounded like in some places you kind of have to have like a utility bill to say you're living somewhere. But what I had found is it said, you know, either ask a friend if you can forward mail there. I have a client who's in a situation where they had to get out of their apartment for health reasons and didn't know where to land either. And they decided to stay at an extended hotel. There was some extended stay hotel. There was some complications with using that address as a residence. So she worked with a friend and is using a friend's address. But you can see how complicated that can get. So I really am not sure I even have a valid answer for that, but it's something I think, you know, using family certainly could help. Like, where would you intend to go if you had nowhere else to go? Could be the answer and how to get through that. All right. Other questions? Is it a good idea to take a portion of your federal refund to buy I-bonds? And you can. I think we talked about I-bonds maybe last week or a couple of weeks ago. So I-bonds you can buy electronically online up to $10,000 each. You each have to have an account. So that's $10,000. The only way to get more I-bonds on an annual basis, you can do that annually. The only way to get more than the $10,000 electronically online through treasurydirect.gov is through a refund on your tax return. And you can buy up to $5,000 of paper bonds through your refund on your tax return. Is it a good idea? It depends on your circumstances. The interest rate on those right now are 7.12. They're set to go, you know, adjust every 6 months. So we don't know where they're going. As long as the interest rates are going up, as long as we have inflation, then the return on I-bonds, you know, will stay nice. If inflation goes down, then they might not pay as an attractive rate as well. So that could depend on when you're buying. We had a call come in from Joanne in Easton, and she's also asked, investment advisor fees, are they tax deductible? So Joanne, you might have not heard at the beginning, Sharon had called with the same question. So investment advisor fees are not deductible right now under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. They eliminated miscellaneous itemized deductions, and that is where we used to take advisor fees. But those advisor fees were even limited then. It was only on taxable accounts, not on accounts like IRAs, and not on to the extent you had tax-exempt income, you would have to prorate it and allocate it. So if you had $1,000 of fees and you had $500 of tax-exempt income and $500 of taxable income, you'd actually would have only been able to deduct half of them because it's you have to prorate it. So no, right now they're not tax-deductible. And then this says it involves Roth conversions. Traditional to IRA is a Roth conversion. So I don't know if you were asking about fees relating to the conversions themselves. It's not deductible either. And again, I'm not sure what kind of fees you might be referring to those. Investment advisor fees is different than like commissions and things like that. So let me just talk for a minute. Maybe your question might have been a little bit more detailed about a traditional IRA to a Roth. Folks, you can convert IRA money to Roth money. IRAs, typically traditional IRAs, you would have taken a deduction for that contribution to that account at some point in the past. The IRS allows a deduction on your tax return if you're within the income limits and you have earned income. And for 2021, it's $6,000. If you're age 50 or over, you could do another $1,000. So that could have been up to $7,000. And in the past, you know, when they were first doing IRAs, I don't remember, it might have been like $4,000. So it could be over all these years you were doing deductible IRAs. You were getting a deduction. You were deferring the tax on that money, getting a tax deduction, saving money back when. And now when you go to take a distribution, a qualified distribution, let's say you're age 59 and a half, it's all taxed at ordinary income because you got a deduction in the past. Even the earnings are going to be taxable. And let's say you have low income. You have really low income and you think, gosh, I wish I could take some of that money out now. Well, the IRS does allow you to convert IRA money to a Roth. You'd have to take the tax hit today. You don't have to be 59 and a half to do it. You could be, 40 and do an IRA conversion to a Roth. You just have to say you're going to pay the tax on it. So let's pretend you decide to convert your IRA to a Roth and you want to convert. You don't have to convert the whole thing, by the way. You can convert some. I do this for clients all the time. We might convert 1 year $10,000, another year $100,000, another year $50,000. It all depends on the income situation and the deductions. So you can do a partial conversion. You don't have to do the whole thing. And when you convert it, you pay the tax today and put it into a Roth, which will grow income tax-free. And then when it grows income tax-free, with Roth, if you're the original owner, you have no required minimum distribution. So you're growing this retirement account income tax-free, and you don't have to take it out. If you have children, you could pass it on to them. Whereas the IRA does have a required minimum distribution starting at age 72. You have to take out a minimum amount and pay income tax on it. All right. So, Joanne, if you had fees relating to that conversion, I don't know if that's where your original question came from, but no, not deductible. All right. So I hope that helped. Ryan in our office had given me some, general observations of a lot of different kinds of questions he's been getting. And so I'll go over some of those as well. I want to give the phone number again. If you have any tax questions, happy to help. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can also send questions to the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Ryan had said he was getting questions, I believe, on residential energy tax credits. He had said resident tax credits, and I think he meant residential energy tax credits because he also mentioned EV purchase. EV purchase is an electrical vehicle purchase. So there are still, for 2021, some residential energy tax credits. Some of those were going away in 2022, unless they extend it. They've been, threatening to go away for years, and every year they extend it. But for 2021, if you had, like energy efficient windows or doors put in, and you have a certification, a manufacturer's certification indicating that and you've never taken an energy credit before, you can get an energy credit for certain of those kinds of expenses. It's not huge credits, usually between $200 and $500, but certainly something worth checking out. There's a great website for that called energystar.gov, and there's a link for the tax credits. The bigger credits that are still available are for the renewable energy tax credits. And typically what we're talking about are like the solar panels you see on rooftops. Those are huge credits. So we still have those available through 2023. 26% of those systems placed in service between January 1 of 2023. So through 2022, 26% credit. And through December 31st of 2023, it goes down to 22%. So for 2022, it's 26%. For 2023, it's 22%. That's for renewable energy tax credits. More information, again, available on energystar.gov. And that is for both principal residences and second homes, but not rental properties. Folks, if you have questions, there's still plenty of time. Phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 FM, also available on the WDIY app and at WDIY.org. Podcasts of prior programs are also available there under Public Affairs. The topic this evening is listeners' tax questions. If you have any, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're a little gun-shy, you can talk or give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. I want to mention one other, the electric vehicle credit. I kind of skipped over that. So the electrical vehicle credit can be anywhere between $2,500 and $7,500. This has been around for a long time. It depends on what kind of car you buy. So one of the things you want to make sure you do if you are considering buying an electrical vehicle or a hybrid is asking the dealership, does this car qualify for the credit? Because it's limited on how many vehicles are manufactured. So you want to make sure that if you're getting one, did your car that you want to buy already hit the cap? Or, you know, is there a comparable car made by a different manufacturer that would still qualify for the credit? And the IRS website has lists of the kinds of cars that qualify for the credit and how much of a credit you can get. So I just had a client ask about this, and I had looked it up, and they were still eligible for a $7,500 credit. But I think that's always moving. It's a moving target. So IRS.gov, one of my favorite websites, I'm always on it. Not that it always is the most efficient, but there is lots of information there. IRS.gov, in the search box, type electric vehicle tax credit, and it should get you to the page that might apply for you. Ryan had also said clients are asking about multi-state credits for taxes paid to another state. So what we're talking about there, particularly, I would say, if we're a Pennsylvania resident, particularly because the show's out of Pennsylvania, so I'm going to give that as an example. If I am a Pennsylvania resident, I have to pay Pennsylvania taxes on my earnings. If I work in New York, New York is going to tax my earnings in New York. And what will happen then is I'm paying taxes in New York, but Pennsylvania will let me take a credit for the amount of taxes that I paid to New York, but no more than what I would pay in Pennsylvania. So if the tax rate in New York is 5% and the tax rate in Pennsylvania is 3.07, then I'm going to get a credit only up to the amount of tax I would pay here. But that is like a multi-state tax credit. And certain states, you know, you don't necessarily get it. So for example, let's pretend I'm a Pennsylvania resident and I work in New Jersey. We have something called reciprocity. So if I live in Pennsylvania, I work in New Jersey. My New Jersey employer is supposed to withhold Pennsylvania state taxes for me. If they don't, then that's my problem. And what happens is I have to file my Pennsylvania return, pay my Pennsylvania tax. They will not allow me a tax credit against the taxes I paid in New Jersey because there's reciprocity between us. The employer was supposed to withhold Pennsylvania. They're not going to let me have a tax credit for that. What I have to do then is pay the tax in Pennsylvania. Then I have to file a tax return in New Jersey and get a full, you know, a full refund for my taxes that I paid there because they weren't supposed to withhold New Jersey taxes. All right. I've had cases where I've had clients who've told me their employer will not do it. I don't know. I don't know how you go after someone like that. So every year what they do is they have to file estimates, pay estimates for Pennsylvania, and then get their refund from New Jersey. So it's a little crazy. But typically, if you're paying taxes on income you earned in another state, or that you have property in another state, maybe you have a business in another state or a rental property in another state, and you're paying taxes in that other state, when you file your Pennsylvania return, you can get a credit for taxes paid to that other state. And that's, you know, other than this reciprocity example I gave, quite often that is the case. The state where you're a resident is going to want to tax you as a resident and then give you a credit for any taxes you're paying to another state. All right. Anne from Bethlehem, all women tonight, Joanne and Sharon and Anne in Bethlehem. Under medical, prescription only, or can I deduct vitamins over the counter if the doctor told me I should take over the counter medications? Typically, you know, it's prescriptions. It's not over the counter. I think they even got more strict. For a while, I think they got a little bit more flexible about over the counter medicines, and then they got strict again. So I am really not aware of over-the-counter medicine being deductible. And again, so often people work so hard to add up all their medical, and then you don't qualify to deduct it anyway because either the limitation is more than what your medical cost, or you use the standard deduction and don't itemize. So if you are someone who you have a lot of medical, then it might be worth going through and adding up your prescriptions and your premiums and your long-term care insurance, by the way, which has a cap on it, but long-term care insurance is also a deduction. You want to really ask if you have a tax preparer, ask them if it's worth it. I have a lot of clients who say to me, Lori, what do you think? Is it worth it? And quite often, unless someone has nursing care, or really low income and high premiums and high prescriptions and maybe hearing aids and dental work, it's hard to get a medical deduction these days. It really is. I mean, to get over that hurdle of the 7.5% of the page one income and then get over the hurdle of the high standard deduction, very hard to get a medical deduction these days. So, Anne, typically prescriptions, I would say vitamins, definitely not. Probably not. And just see if it's even worth it for you to add those all up anyway. All right. We've talked a little bit about employee business expenses. You know, we talked about the home office. The same thing applies for employee business expenses for federal. Miscellaneous itemized deduction, not allowed anymore. If you're self-employed, of course, that's not an employee business expense. That's self-employed deductions. And for Pennsylvania, things like uniforms, union dues, what else did I say? What else can I think of? Oh, mileage. If you're an outside salesman and your employer doesn't, you know, reimburse you, then you might have mileage. That could be an unreimbursed employee business expense for state purposes. In particular, again, for Pennsylvania, certain states may not give you that deduction anyway. It's really state by state. You'd have to check it out. People asking about filing separately instead of married filing joint. Most tax software will, as you're entering the information, if you're doing it yourself or if your preparer is doing it, if they're entering taxpayer interest, tax, you know, joint interest, joint investment accounts, spouse interest, spouse investment income, spouse's W-2, taxpayer's W-2, entering all that information in the software, identifying who owns it. The software will kind of do a calculation to say, here's what the return and the taxes for married filing joint, which we're used to seeing, but the software will usually give us what we call a diagnostic saying, hey, if they filed separate, they might actually save a lot more money. Why would that be? Sometimes if there's a large disparity in the income, it might make sense for one to file or to file separately, even though you're married. If you're going to get some other kind of tax breaks or tax benefits. The big caution here, and I just had this, you know, in the last couple years with a couple, slightly devastating because you think you're saving money by filing separately. And then they happened to be age 65 and they were on Medicare. And what happens when your income goes over a certain threshold, you might have to pay more in Medicare premiums. When you're married filing separate, it's like right away the premiums skyrocket. And so they had to pay a lot of money. We quickly have been attempting to amend the 2019 return to fix this. But of course, the IRS, you know, we don't know what they even did with these paper returns. They can't seem to find these things, match them up, can't seem to reconcile it, you know, getting notices from all the IRS centers across the country. So you really don't want to mess with this stuff too much if you don't have to. So you make sure you know what you're doing. It could make sense if you're under 65. If you're on Medicare, I would almost say it's probably rarely worth it to file separately if it's going to throw you into those high Medicare premiums, you know, case by case, but certainly think that through. For younger people, it might make sense. But, you know, I was just looking at one actually right before I came here, and the married filing separate number calculations in the software looked a little questionable to me. I haven't dug into it, but it was kind of showing these extra child credits that the, you know, one of the spouses would be entitled to for the children. But in reading the literature, when you're married filing separate, there's still a limit on those child tax credits. So, you know, it's complicated. Really complicated, and you want to make sure you know what you're doing. I had another situation where someone filed an inheritance tax return. They did not report the real estate on the inheritance tax return because mom had given the house to the children many years ago, but mom continued to live in the house. We call that a life estate. Mom retained a life estate in that house. And generally, and I'm not an attorney, and you should seek an attorney if you have this situation, but they didn't report it on for inheritance tax purposes. And then the kids go to sell the house after mom's died because they own the house. And find out when they go to sell it, they're going to have a huge gain on it because mom's cost basis was practically nothing. Well, then they hear, oh gosh, if you had filed an inheritance tax return, you'd get a step up in basis to the date of death value because life estates are required to be reported on the inheritance tax return for Pennsylvania purposes. And oops, we didn't do that. What do we do now? because capital gain, it could be at 15% and the inheritance tax is at 4.5%. So basically, when you do find that there's assets that you failed to report on the return, and in this case, the return had already been accepted, you can file a supplemental return for inheritance tax purposes and just report the additional assets that you missed reporting. So that's kind of the general tone of it. All right. I won't get into more details, and I recommend seeking out an attorney in these situations. All right. Next week, I am going to be attending an event, so I will not be here. And Rod Young, CPA and CFP, and Jackie Cornelius, CFP, will be hosting for me, and they are going to do the show on tax planning. I said tax planning with retirement accounts. So remember how we talked about IRA conversions and Roth conversions? Maybe they'll touch on that a little bit. I'll make sure I mention that to them. So tax planning with retirement accounts. I want to thank Eric for being here tonight. Thank you, James Johnson, for being here. And thank you, listeners. And thank you, listeners, for calling in with all your great questions. I really appreciate it. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.